The Director of Clinical Training is in. Welcome to the DCT Podcast, your portable meeting with a Director of Clinical Training. I'm Joel Hughes, the DCT for the Clinical Psychology Program at Midwestern University. This is private social media, so this podcast is not endorsed by my program, department, or university. My views are my own.
Okay, I'm back. And this time, I have someone to interview. And so I'd like to introduce Dr. Joe Currier, the principal investigator of the Spiritual and Religious Competencies Project, which is supported by a grant from the John Templeton Foundation. Dr. Currier is a full professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of South Alabama, and he was the director of clinical training for the Clinical and Counseling Psychology doctoral program from 2015 to 2020. His research focuses on trauma and moral injury, spiritually integrated mental health care, and other topics related to applied psychology of religious and spiritual competencies. He has over 100 publications in the form of peer-reviewed articles and book chapters in support of his program of research. And so please welcome Joe Currier to the DCT Podcast. Dr. Currier, when I was on internship way back in the day, long time ago, we won't need to talk about how long it was, I had a patient who had cancer and it was terminal. And he was a single dad of a couple of preteen girls. And he was concerned because he was trying to create some moments and some memories for when he was gone. And so they were playing board games and they were having family night, and he would become tearful. And in the session, he said, you know, I don't know if I should be crying in front of my daughters. This is probably bad. You know, I don't want to get them upset. And what I told him, because I happened to know that he was some kind of Baptist, I said, well, you know, I pulled out of my memory banks the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. And I said, well, you know, even Jesus cried. And this was when he was about to raise Lazarus from the dead. And So death maybe is sad. Maybe it's just sad. And maybe it's okay. Maybe it's okay if you're sad with your daughters. I think they're sad. And, you know, I confess, I never told my supervisor about this interaction because I didn't know if I was doing the right thing. Yeah. Was that cool or was I out of line? It's like, I didn't know how to even address religion and spirituality in an actual session. You know, in hindsight, I thought it was really helpful. And little did I know, I was doing a little bit of acceptance and commitment at the time. But it's like, I was conflicted. You know, what do you do with that?
Yeah, well, I think you're highlighting the reality that nobody has neutral reactions to, you know, to the reality of death, but then also to, you know, just topics related to religion, spirituality, right? I think from a clinical standpoint, if you were my supervisee, I might want to, check in to see, hey, did you get this person's permission to incorporate, some religious content within the treatment, right? And if he said, yeah, this is a great idea, and you know what, like that, I would really appreciate if you did that. Then as a supervisor, I think it would have, possibly been, a courageous move, right? Vice versa, if he said, no, I really don't want to bring my faith into it at all, and you did an intervention like that, that might be cause for concern, right? But from a competent standpoint, you're not going to be able to really judge the effectiveness of your intervention unless you asked him in the first place about his faith or spirituality.
So first of all, I'm not advocating that we omit things from supervision, by the way, but I'm highlighting that I had no framework for that. And even in this brief response, you're telling me that there actually is a set of competencies that you can learn that will help you to negotiate these kinds of encounters.
Absolutely. Right. And then recognizing, also just, from an awareness standpoint, again, people don't have neutral responses to, religion, spirituality, right? So people may have very, very positive, potentially idealistic responses, like they get really excited, right? Because they think there's maybe synchrony there, or they just believe in it so much. Or vice versa, they might, you know, have very negative or hostile, right? Both of which can interfere with a psychologist's ability to be responsive and present.
Okay. That totally makes sense. So Dr. Currier, the goal of the Spiritual and Religious Competencies Project is to improve mental health care and promote human flourishing by ensuring that mental health professionals have the basic religious and spiritual competencies to attend to their clients' religious faith or spirituality in clinical practice. But what occurs to me is, like, you know, why should clinical and counseling psychology graduate students care about this?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think first and foremost, spirituality and religion are core areas of diversity and identity for many people. You know, they're included, you know, in pretty much every definition of individual and cultural diversity, you know, in our profession, you know, of psychology. And, you know, we're at a point in time where religion and spirituality also have become key aspects of evidence-based practice.
You know, really?
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, there's a pretty sizable evidence base, you know, to show that for better or worse, faith and spirituality can either hinder or enhance a variety of health outcomes. And there's also been, you know, significant advancements in translational research, you know, demonstrating that incorporating faith or spirituality in the context of counseling or psychotherapy, you know, can support outcomes and also enhance engagement, you know, in treatment. We have a large range of validated measures that are available for research and practice. And there's also been a lot of evidence from the recipients of our services, the clients themselves, you know, to show that most people don't want to exclude their faith or their spirituality outside of their mental health care.
Okay, I was going to ask what religion and spirituality have to do with mental health. And you're saying that they are involved and that it actually feels strange to intentionally exclude your spirituality or religion or faith from your mental health when you're meeting with a counselor or a therapist.
Correct.
And so
now it's you know, like most things related to human beings, it's complicated.
Of course.
So in the same way that there are many religious people who want a psychologist who can respect and honor their faith or spirituality, there are non-religious people who also want someone with religious or spiritual competence. And there are religious people who don't necessarily want a psychologist who has these competencies.
I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but it makes sense to me that having religious and spiritual competencies might involve knowing what not to talk about if the client really doesn't want to.
Absolutely. So this is about enhancing the effectiveness of psychologists to promote health and healing and wellness, and also to decrease the probability that we will do harm in our profession.
Okay. So kind of a related idea is, if someone is really religious, let's say, why wouldn't they just go see a clinician that matches their religion? You know, you hear a lot of things about, like, Christian counseling or Christian therapists. Why not just go to someone that's in your faith tradition?
Well, I think this is the case for many people. You know, so there is, you know, research to show that religious and non-religious people alike do prefer a match, you know, with a therapist or clinician, you know, who shares their same beliefs or values. But at the same time, we try really hard to avoid, you know, what we might call balkanization, you know, in our profession, right? That somehow, you know, what gives me, you know, competence as a psychologist is some aspect of my own personal background, right? When this is really a matter of training, you know, and expertise, right? So I think there are many religious people who want the most effective clinician, the person who's going to be best equipped to help them, regardless of, you know, whether there's a perfect match regarding faith or spirituality.
I can envision a situation where maybe a devout person doesn't want to see someone from their same tradition, especially if they're struggling with, like, maybe what they feel are some teachings they don't 100% agree with. And if there is a strong match, there might be a worry that, you know, my counselor is going to try to convince me of something that I don't really want to be convinced of right now.
Absolutely. I think particularly, you know, when people are going through, you know, periods of suffering, you know, it's very common to feel angry or disconnected from God or a higher power, to be doubting, you know, religious beliefs and values, to be struggling with standards of moral perfection. And I think there can be a concern that you know, if I go to someone of my same tradition or background, I might be judged.
Also,
there's a lot of people who have negative experiences with kind of religious counselors, right? You know, that maybe they start by attempting a spiritual religious solution, and if it doesn't go well, many people, you know, prefer a more mainstream or secular approach.
And on the same note, there may be parts of the country or parts of your local community where finding a match could be really difficult.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's also just the issue of practicality here, you know, that, you know, that if we tried to match, you know, clients on the basis of psychologists' personal backgrounds across all aspects of diversity, it would get quite unwieldy.
It would. And speaking of diversity, you did mention that this is related to one of the profession-wide competencies with APA. Competency 3 is individual and cultural diversity. And I wonder, is this just a subset of that, or is this worthy of being its whole own area of training and expertise?
Well, I think there are a couple different ways to answer that question, right? So in the Spiritual Religious Competencies Project, we're really trying to focus on what we would consider basic competence, right? That what are the core areas of awareness, knowledge, and skill that we would want to see every psychologist develop or cultivate, right? And then, you know, there could be, you know, advanced areas of competence or maybe even specialization here, right? We really want to focus on just basic areas that we would, you know, expect, you know, would fit in really well with, you know, COA's conceptions of individual and cultural diversity, right? That, you know, that basic competence would be best conceptualized within an intersectionality framework or other frameworks that might guide kind of multicultural training in general.
So inside that competency-based education, you said that these are going to be some of the broad basic competencies that everyone should know. Can you give us an example of a religious or spiritual competency that people should learn?
Yeah, absolutely. I could give you several. I think first and foremost, you know, just expecting that, you know, that psychologists, you know, are self-aware of their own spiritual or religious beliefs and backgrounds, and that they're aware of how, you know, their own personal backgrounds may affect the way they respond to spiritually and religiously diverse clients. You know, so I think self-awareness of one's own background and capacity for bias, you know, would be a basic competence. Having, you know, the skills to discuss religion and spirituality as a routine part of psychological practice. This would be another just basic competence. Having the ability to kind of help clients identify and access strengths or resources related to their religious or spiritual background. Having the ability to identify problems or ways that faith or spirituality, it might be negatively affecting wellness or the capacity for recovery. You know, that these are some of the basic areas of competence that we're attempting to target in our project.
Maybe this is more advanced than basic competencies, but it strikes me that some of these things are well aligned with aspects of the major schools of psychology, such as cognitive behavioral therapy does a lot of work on core beliefs and assumptions, acceptance and commitment, and behavioral activation. Both are going to be looking at values. And I suppose it would be strange to leave out religious and spiritual values from kind of the landscape of someone's closely held values when you're asking them to maybe accept something and then act in accordance with their core values.
Yeah, absolutely here. So I think that the goal, now there are kind of special, what I might call religiously accommodated approaches to cognitive behavioral therapy or acceptance and commitment therapy, that have been studied and have some evidence behind them. That might be, the ability to implement those types of treatments, that might be a more advanced competency. What we're targeting in our project would, the ability that when you're doing behavioral activation, for example, and you're going to be asking people to, to be, scheduling, meaningful, pleasant activities in their lives, right? That we would want to, make sure that psychologists, have an adequately expanded frame of reference where they could, include relationships or activities of a religious or spiritual nature in those types of exercises, right? If it's clinically indicated for the patient.
So understanding someone's religious or spiritual worldview can be synergistic with some of the activities of CBT or ACT, but even if you don't move to the level of I think you called it spiritually accommodated kind of an adaptation.
So there are kind of specialized approaches to these empirically supported treatments that are, tailored for specific traditions or religions. And it would require advanced training to do that. But, I think with religious or spiritual competence, a psychologist ideally is going to be able to incorporate strengths and resources within the context of any form of psychotherapy.
And then maybe even have a framework in which you can understand that someone's religious background could be helpful and a strength or harmful in terms of forming maybe some core beliefs or some assumptions about the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the good and the bad news about religion in particular is that it's very powerful.
Okay. So big effect size for better or worse.
Big effect size in many different ways, both in the service of health and to the hindrance of health and wellness.
So that's very interesting because I have not seen it come up that much in my own graduate training. And so you got to wonder, how do faculty and students feel about these religious and spiritual competencies, or even using religion and spirituality in their own clinical work?
Yeah, so that's one of the questions that we're trying to answer right now, on our spiritual religious competencies project. I think what we're finding, by and large, is that there are very, very few objections, to the aims of our project. And I think many folks, are kind of opening their eyes and kind of recognizing that, wow, like this is, a really underappreciated, relatively unaddressed kind of area of psychological practice that I've maybe been neglecting in my program, or my career. So by and large, I think people are pretty open to what we're trying to do. I think the days of Sigmund Freud's antagonism against religion and the antagonism of other, kind of prominent people in the history of our profession, that those have sort of died down. And, with the rise of multiculturalism, with the rise of key movements and emphases within health systems, like whole person health, community-based care, person-centered care, precision medicine, that there's kind of recognition that, religion and spirituality, can be a really important part of the puzzle here in the work that I do.
Okay, so I may be suffering from a generation effect in terms of, you know, before the rise of multiculturalism, it wasn't talked about that much in graduate training. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder, I mean, maybe there are still some barriers or some concerns. And have you heard anything at all about resistance to
training? Yeah, I think, you know, so we've, you know, we've been able to, you know, to conduct, you know, a series of about 8 focus groups. We've done about over 30 interviews, you know, with kind of leaders, you know, within training programs and professional organizations and psychology and other mental health professions. We've been talking to a lot of folks, and you know, we're receiving very little antagonism or opposition or strong concerns, but there are a lot of really important issues, you know, that we're learning about, you know, so. This will not surprise you, but you know, many faculty, you know, are telling us, hey, this is a great idea, but we have no space whatsoever in our curriculum yeah. to fit anything else in, right? You know, so like this seems like a great idea, but you know, there already are other things that we're leaving off the table, we're leaving unaddressed, and we can't fit it in. I think another barrier that we're hearing from faculty is kind of recognizing that this is something that could be really important in our program, but we don't have anybody to teach the course or to, you know, to do the trainings because none of our faculty, you know, have, you know, ever had any religious or spiritual competency training themselves.
Okay. Right?
So lack of, you know, faculty training or faculty development is another thing that we're hearing. You know, I think importantly, particularly, you know, religions, you know, many of them have, you know, histories of, you know, oppression, you know, with, you know, marginalized groups, you know, so there are concerns about, you know, that if we, you know, formally include training in religion, spirituality, does this mean somehow that we're going to be overlooking social injustice or overlooking, you know, you know, distress and dysfunction that have been caused by, you know, religions over the years. But these are some of the major barriers that we're hearing.
So religion and spirituality are adjacent to some very contentious and unfortunate things, including oppression sometimes, wars historically over the, you know, centuries, and kind of the religion science divide, mm-hmm. Just even the polarization of the 21st century, where, you know, you don't talk about religion or politics at Thanksgiving. And so I guess people Absolutely. Are maybe concerned about conflict or about being adjacent to topics that have some like historical problems. And so I can appreciate that. And then I wonder if maybe, I wonder if some of the faculty don't have a more secular background, because there was an argument back in the day that clinical psychology and counseling psychology were kind of an alternative to the priesthood or the pastoral care. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they don't feel that they come from an identity that's really holding on closely to religion and spirituality. So what do you think about that?
No. So you're talking about, you know, what's sometimes called the religiousness gap.
Between
psychologists and,
that's new to me.
You know, the public that we serve, you know, that I think that the findings are about 2 decades old right now, but there is evidence to suggest that, you know, that maybe only 1 or 2 out of every 5 psychologists, you know, would report a religious affiliation of some sort and, you know, and is, you know, participating in, you know, a conventional religious tradition or group of some sort, right? But the public that we serve, it's closer to 4 out of 5.
Okay.
Right. So there's a bit of a lack of synchrony between, you know, the religious beliefs and worldviews of psychologists and the people that we're trying to serve.
From our conversation today, it sounds like this is not going to be sectarian. This is going to be at the intersection of at least being aware of people, of your own and your clients' religion and spirituality, and understanding the pros and the cons, the barriers and the facilitators to just maybe be, maybe I'll call it fluency to kind of overcome how you may feel that there's a religiousness gap and not having to feel responsible maybe for some of the various problems that have been associated with religion and spirituality, such as oppression and wars and maybe discrimination of marginalized groups. So it sounds like you're trying to take a very kind of a nuanced and open-minded approach.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so, you know, and really, like, you know, our primary focus, you know, is, you know, to, you know, to really focus not only on the substance of religion and spirituality, but also focus on the functions that religion and spirituality play in people's relationships, in their behavior, you know, and in kind of all of the, you know, the determinants of health and well-being, you know, in their lives, right? So with that in mind, like, we're not necessarily, you know, trying to change anybody's, you know, beliefs. We're not trying to proselytize here. We're really trying to kind of, you know, better equip, you know, psychologists to kind of both harness the strengths and the resources from religion and spirituality to be more culturally responsive in their work, and then also, you know, to be able to identify and address, you know, ways that faith or spirituality might be interfering with healing and recovery.
So given that you have a grant to do this, I know that every grant application I've ever read starts with the problem. Mm-hmm. And so there has to be a lack of training, relatively speaking.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, again, we don't have a wealth of studies, you know, to look at, and the data is getting a little bit older. So I hope that, you know, things have improved, you know, but, you know, the data suggests that, you know, the vast majority of APA accredited graduate programs and internship programs do not provide any formal coverage of training in the area of religion or spirituality. You know, so there have been, you know, surveys with, you know, directors of clinical training, you know, over the years, you know, that it would suggest that, you know, most programs, if they do address religion or spirituality, it's in a bit of a happenstance approach where, you know, it's not done systematically, where, you know, maybe a program, you know, has someone like me who specializes in psychology of religion, yeah, spirituality, and, you know, and because this is my area of expertise, you know, the faculty, you know, then affirms and empowers me to do some teaching or training in this area. You know, or, you know, if students are doing their practicum training and they just happen to work with, you know, a client, you know, who is highly religious, it may come up there, but it may not. You know, that, you know, the training, it's not happening in, you know, a planful, systematic way. You know, religion, spirituality, competency training isn't part of the curriculum map.
No, it's really not.
Yeah, you know, most programs. Yeah.
Absolutely not. I just lived through the self-study and accreditation process, yeah, and we did not address religious and spiritual competencies whatsoever.
Yeah. And we, so we're waiting for our site visit here in the spring. So I wrote much of our self-study. We submitted it April before COVID hit, and we're still waiting, but we're in the same boat, to be completely honest.
So maybe this isn't fair, but by reason of analogy, if there's no one on your faculty that is a chemical dependency and addiction specialist, and if it's not in the curriculum map for accreditation, then even though everybody knows that chemical dependency and addiction is highly, highly comorbid with mental health, there's a chance that it's going to get like insufficiently addressed in training and in clinical work. Is that fair, or am I overstating the case?
No, you're absolutely right. Now, There could be, a situation where maybe, there's a student who's really interested in that topic and they're very engaging and socially outgoing. So, sometimes, students can learn from each other, but you cannot guarantee with assurance that students are gaining any preparation to work with people with substance use disorders by the time they leave the program.
Okay, so it is a little bit analogous then. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up students and training, because let's imagine that I'm at one of the very few programs that doesn't have a curriculum for religious and spiritual competencies. What could a person do to, if they were like, this comes up with every client, I want to learn about this, what can they do?
Well, it depends. If it's a student, I would encourage students to speak with their mentors, speak with their training faculty. If this is an area that they believe is not being addressed, adequately, so there's wisdom sort of baked into COA's accreditation and kind of self-study process, where programs like ours are, receiving feedback from students and allowing that feedback to then shape the curricula. So I think I would encourage students to, to talk with your training faculty. With that said, there's an increasing volume of training resources that are out there, books that can be read. There is amassing psychological literature, on, religion and spirituality. There are videos, webinars, continuing education, courses. Most recently, there's a program called Spiritual Competency Training and Mental Health. It was developed by several colleagues, most notably Michelle Pierce and Ken Pargament. And this it's an 8-session kind of online training program, that has been able to show that, when mental health clinicians kind of take the time to go through this program, that at the end of it, they are feeling kind of much more capable and efficacious with respect to core areas of awareness, knowledge, and skill related to religion and spirituality.
So some independent study or continuing education or professional development is available. Yeah. But back to the advocacy part. So if someone says, hey, we need this in our curriculum, is this the kind of thing that can be infused or added to a class, or does someone have to create a new class for religious and spiritual competencies?
I don't think it's feasible to add classes to most.
True. Right?
And then if the solution is to add a class, it's probably going to be an elective class. Mm-hmm. And which students are going to take that class?
People who have a lot of time.
The people who have a lot of time, or the people who already probably have competence, already interested in it, so they're not the ones that need it.
Right? Okay.
So I think the only best solution is to infuse religion, spirituality, competencies within existing courses. In the same way that APA kind of asks programs, to infuse multicultural diversity training at all aspects of the program, like that, ideally, we're also going to be including religion, spirituality within that training. Not just as, a couple more areas that are listed in the definition, but actually are getting addressed in repeated systematic ways within programs.
Okay, that makes sense. Maybe this would fit in a practicum class that everyone takes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then I'm wondering, though, where would people find out more? If someone's listening to the podcast and they say, this sounds good, I want this in my program, where do they go?
I think right now, I would direct folks to our project website. So it is srcproject.org.
srcproject.org.
Yep, we tried to keep it short and sweet. And that this website is it's going to be growing and expanding. you know, over the coming year. You know, so if anybody is interested in our project, please go to the website. You know, we offer a bunch of background information, you know, related to the project. And we're going to be generating, you know, a variety of kind of empirically supported training methods, assessment tools, just a bunch of different resources for faculty and students to draw on, you know, to enhance religious spiritual competencies. And that over time, you know, we're going to be adding these resources to the website, and they'll be freely available for anybody that would like them.
Okay, I just typed in that URL, and I also see funding opportunity. What's that?
Well, thank you for asking that question. this is a large project. We have four sub projects, all of which are running simultaneously in parallel to each other. So our current funding opportunity is for our strengthening spiritual competency training within graduate education. And what we're doing in this kind of project is that we're taking the SCTMH training that I just discussed. It's, you know, it is a 7 to 8 hour kind of online continuing education course. And what we're going to do is we're going to enhance and contextualize that online training course to be incorporated within the context of a graduate school course.
Okay. Right?
We're going to be developing some kind of classroom kind of activities, you know, and then we're going to work with 20 instructors across psychology programs, social work programs, counseling programs, marriage and family therapy programs, to, you know, to get trained themselves in our religious and spiritual competencies, to learn, you know, how to utilize the SCTMH training. And then we're going to evaluate, you know, the effectiveness of incorporating this training within the context of a graduate school course. So hopefully, you know, we will be able to show, you know, at the end that our hypotheses are supported, that that this program really will make a difference in helping students, you know, to establish a basic foundation in religion and spirituality competence.
Outstanding. And so if you're listening to this in 2022, maybe take a look. And if it's 2025, it's too late. By then you should be going to find the articles.
deadline for the RFP is July 1st. So
well, that's soon.
There still is about 5 or 6 weeks to apply.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you talking with me today, Dr. Currier. I think this has a lot of promise. It's one of those things where everybody knows it's there, and it's, we don't talk about it that often unless it kind of gets tucked into, you know, cultural diversity. But maybe this is an opportunity for some people to have more training in something that is just so central to, I guess you said, 4 out of 5 people's lives when they come to be our clients.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. That you know, that this is part of the human experience for many people around the world, for good and for bad. And because of that, you know, we want, you know, psychologists, you know, to have just the basic foundation necessary to address spiritual and religious dimensions of people's lives.
Thanks for listening to the DCT podcast. If you want to contact me, email me at jhughes1@kent.edu. This podcast is private social media. It's not endorsed by my program, department, or university. Or disclaimer, the podcast does not establish a supervisory relationship, blah, blah, blah. Disclaimer, my views are my own. Disclaimer. If my views contradict those of your DCT or your advisor, you can ignore me. Remember, not all DCTs are your DCT. If you enjoyed the show, rate it on iTunes or Spotify, and don't tell your friends, unless they're graduate students in health service psychology.